Thursday night at the Vets in Providence, First Works presents American Rhapsody, the Gershwin songbook. As a prelude to the show, First Works hosted a panel discussion earlier this month about composer George Gershwin's inspiration by, and some say appropriation of, African-American music. For this month's Artscape, we hear from two of the panelists, African-American producer and composer Melvin Gibbs and white music critic Larry Blumenfeld, who writes for The Wall Street Journal and The Village Voice, among other publications. We focus particular attention on the Gershwin folk opera, Porgy and Bess. That's probably the most famous tune from Porgy and Bess, Summertime, and we're hearing it by the original Bess, Anne Brown, from a 1940 cast recording. Porgy and Bess was inspired by Porgy, a novel by white Southern author Dubose Hayward that tells the story of characters living in the black slums of Charleston, South Carolina. Hayward, Gershwin, and his brother Ira collaborated on the opera, with George Gershwin living for a time on Folly Island off the South Carolina coast, absorbing the African-American culture there as the setting for the opera.
Gershwin basically did ethnological research in Charleston and the Carolina Sea Islands.
Music producer and composer Melvin Gibbs says the use of that research raises questions about Gershwin's borrowing from local culture for some of the tunes for Porgy and Bess.
Research in and of itself is a good thing, you know, learning to know more about different people in different contexts. The question becomes the framing that happened afterwards. It starts to speak to issues of appropriation and erasure and general levels of respect and disrespect.
What about what he ended up creating? Larry Blumenfeld, as a music critic, what do you think of his actual work with Porgy and Bess?
I mean, first of all, I don't necessarily want to separate the artistic achievement from its context and its cultural content. On the one hand, however you feel about what Gershwin used and how he used it, it's like so many other examples in American culture, in the culture of the United States. It's so rich and deep with issues we can talk about and layers that relate to race, identity, how things connect, who owns what. I read an article in the New York Times about the fact that the Hungarian State Opera presented a staging of Porgy and Bess that had either an all-white or a mostly white cast, and that they had transferred the setting from Catfish Row in Charleston to a refugee camp in a stateless, nameless place. So now you've got these additional layers in a situation way past Gershwin's death that has to do with otherness and other kinds of appropriation. So, I mean, it is like so much, especially in jazz culture, it's fertile soil to both discover history that may be hidden or erased, but also talk about these relationships. In terms of the other question you asked artistically, if I'm going to wear my critic hat for a minute, is that, well, Porgy and Bess gave us some indelible melodies and some indelible songs that were actually fairly complex in their presentation and that helped us really understand a little more about blues and spirituals, and that gave great material for Billie Holiday, Ella Fitzgerald, Miles Davis and Gil Evans, and many other artists way outside of the jazz sphere, inspiration to work with. So, you know, I think that's an achievement in and of itself.
So, Melvin Gibbs, would you say then that Gershwin, having culturally appropriated some of what he put into Porgy and Bess from the people down in South Carolina, did he end up giving anything back to African Americans in terms of music that they could also work with?
I mean, on one hand, the short answer is yes. But on the other hand, the longer answer is there's a break there. It's kind of like if I take your land and I grow crops on it and I give all the crops to the community, am I helping the community? Of course, but you still took my land. So you have this kind of strange dialogue that you have to make an acceptance of a certain way that the culture works to allow the process to continue. And that's, to me, that's what makes this whole thing problematic. I don't have a problem with Gershwin. He's obviously a very creative person on many levels. It's a systemic thing. We know that because he lived in America at the time that he lived, and he had the particular set of tools to move forward within the culture, that he made a certain set of choices. So the question from my end becomes, what does that mean for the people who got the bad end of that choice? Not necessarily what does it mean for the people who were able to move forward, because the people who were able to move forward, and we, to a large extent, know who all of these people are. We don't have to worry about Gershwin's effect on Miles Davis and Gil Evans. We do have to worry about Gershwin's effect on whoever he might have actually borrowed those melodies from.
Because we don't know who they are.
Because we don't know who they are.
And we won't.
Yes.
See, now when Melvin's talking about Porgy and Bess, you know, he's touching on a culture that is personal to him and part of his own personal lineage. So
this is the culture on the islands off the coast of South Carolina that Gershwin actually took from.
Yeah.
And you have roots there?
Yes. My father's side of the family is from there, you know, and my many relatives, my literally hundreds of cousins are from there.
So in a way, Gershwin could have taken something from one of your ancestors.
Yeah. I mean, we'll never really know, right?
Right.
Sometimes I get a little bit concerned about talking about cultural appropriation in harsh terms, just because I know how much no art is pure, no culture is pure, and how much different things beget one another. But at the same time, you must acknowledge the history in this hemisphere, the culture in this hemisphere was born of a slave trade involving enslaved people, their colonial masters, and that made for an incredible collision of things that created a lot of things, including art forms like jazz. But there is a way of celebrating that and at the same time honoring things. Okay, well, if we're going to talk about George Gershwin, let's also talk about African-American composers William Grant Still and James P. Johnson, who were contemporaries of Gershwin's, some would consider mentors of Gershwin's, didn't have the opportunity Gershwin had. And let's think about the context for things.
So in other words, when we listen to this music, how would you want us to hear it? What kind of things should be in our minds when we listen to it to help us understand more?
I mean, looking at it from the standpoint of 2018, I would say that what makes it an issue is the respect for the sources, not the genius of the final product.
I want to add to your question about, well, how do we consider, appreciate, deal, approach that work and other works today? It's like, well, one way is exactly what's happened today. Well, if you present Gershwin's music, invite an perhaps unexpected discussion of its context and challenge people to think about that.
Well, I hope that that's what we've been able to do a little bit here today, at least expand people's minds around what it is they're actually listening to. Do they know where that came from? And try to find out more. I want to thank you both, Melvin Gibbs and Larry Blumenfeld, for coming by and talking about this with us.
Thank you for having
us. Thank you.